to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. As those of you who have been listening have heard, we don't merely present the news, but try to explain what's happening. And for those who have been trying to listen to the online stream at the Genesis Communication Network, there was a first hiccup, and I have been told that the first 20 minutes of our show today had another show instead, and that sometime during the opening segment there was the transfer over to our show. The archive is going to fix that problem, so for those interested in listening online to what we discussed during the first 20 minutes of the program, it will be available by way of the archives. Well, now we've reached the second hour of our program, and as we will each day, we're going to engage God on His terms, not man's terms, through His Torah, which many of you will be surprised to hear does not mean law, but instead means teaching. And by way of His covenant, which is a family-oriented relationship, which features five terms and conditions that not one in a million people thinks about. Now, if you're an agnostic, or if you know that there's something not quite right with your religion, this is going to be the best part of each day's program. For those of you who would like to call to challenge anything that I have to say, to question something that you hear, or if you just want to affirm what you are listening to, then our telephone number is 877-300-7645. That is 877-300-7645. In our Torah part of our program, we're going to begin a review through a series of books that's called Yada Yah. Yada means to know. You probably heard it if you're old enough to have listened to the Seinfeld programs. They would constantly say yada, yada, yada. Well, yada means to know. Yah is the shortened version of God's name, which is Yahweh. Now, many of you may wonder how in the world I would go about, or why even, that I would go about pronouncing God's name as opposed to just calling Him God. Well, the reason is that He is of the conclusion that the single most important thing for us to know is His name. And there's this myth that says that no one knows how to pronounce His name, that the four consonants that comprise the letters of His name can no longer be properly pronounced. And let's address that for a moment. First of all, Yahweh's name is written with the same 22 characters that comprise every Hebrew word. The very fact that we can say Torah tells us that we know how to pronounce three of the four letters in Yahweh's name. And the opening letter, which is a yod, a y, is always been the one that has had no confusion associated with it, although a lot of corruption associated with it. Because Y's were turned to I's in Latin, and around the 17th century, there was this movement to change an I at the beginning of a name to a harder sound, to what has become the J sound. In the middle of the 17th century, most names that began with a I or that were originally a Y migrated to the hard J sound. And so all of the names that you have become familiar with emerged in the 17th century as a direct result of this both religious and scholarly move based upon a Latin scholar to change names that started with a vowel to make them start with a consonant. Now, here's the reality. The four letters, of which two are repeated, so there are three letters in Yahweh's name, are all vowels. There isn't a consonant among them. And we know how to pronounce His name because we can pronounce Torah. The O sound in Torah comes from the Hebrew waw, the same letter that is in the middle of Yahweh's name. The ah sound at the end of Torah is from the vowel he. It is the same vowel that we find in the Hebrew word haya. Now, The reason that Haya is important is when Moshe, on the as he was a shepherd in Arabia, was confronted by God, he recognized that that the children of Israel, who were slaves in Egypt, would have absolutely no idea of his name. And so they, he said, you know, who is it that you want me to tell them? Because they're going to ask me, who is it that has sent you? Who is it that has sent you, sent me? And they're going to ask for a name. And so God immediately says, I am who I am. Well, the I am who I am is from the verb haya. It was scribed in first person, so you get I am as opposed to just exist. And the Hebrew verb haya means to exist. It means that God exists, and if we want to exist, he is the lone means for continued existence. But haya is the verb that is used. Haya, which is, it has a he, a yod, and a he, once again tells us how to pronounce Yahweh's name. There is no confusion in Hebrew among any scholar that Haya is pronounced Haya. And yet, the Y-A-H ending of Haya is the first syllable in Yahweh's name. It is a vowel, and it means, I exist, I am. He then went on to tell Moshe that, tell the children of Israel that Yahweh has sent you to them. Yahweh uses his name 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, if you're reading an English Bible, you will probably miss that fact because your religious leaders, clerics, and religious institutions like publishers changed Yahweh to the Lord. Now, the reason that this is a really serious issue is that in Yirmiyahu, which you would know as the corrupted name Jeremiah, again, there's no J in Hebrew, so it can't be Jeremiah, it's Yirmiyahu. In the book of Yirmiyahu, which means Yah lifts up, Yahweh tells us that the single greatest crime that has ever been perpetrated on humanity is the replacement of his name, Yahweh, with the title Lord. Now, the reason for that is, as we will learn as we study his word, that Lord is the title that Yahweh applied to Satan. Satan is Hasatan, it means the adversary in Hebrew. And the reason that Lord is ascribed to Hasatan, to Satan, and not to Yahweh, is the fact that it is Satan's ambition to lord over not only God, but also man, to own and control men's souls. God has no desire to do any of these things. In fact, just the opposite. His goal is to be our Father. You cannot act like a lord. You cannot act like a master and be a good father. God hates being called Lord with a passion. As a matter of fact, in the book of Hosea, which means salvation, which we've corrupted only modestly to Hosea, upon his return, he's predicting a great swath of time, and he says upon his return, the one thing that he lists that is the most pleasing to him about his return is he will never have to hear the title Lord ever again. He hates it. And so what clerics and publishers have done is they've replaced Yahweh's name, which is extraordinarily easy to pronounce. All you have to do is look at the Hebrew word Torah or the verb Haya, combine those two, and you know how to pronounce his name. It's Yahweh. They replaced that with the Lord, the title ascribed by God himself to Satan. Now, since we have begun this this exercise of coming to know as opposed to being influenced by myths and misconceptions, the myth being that God is the Lord, the myth conception that you cannot pronounce Yahweh's name. Let's deal with another myth, and that is the one where there is tremendous confusion. It's the issue between knowing and believing. Knowing and believing are not the same thing, just as faith and trust are not the same thing. In the second half of this program, if you're willing to invest the time and if you have an open mind, I can assure you that over time you are going to come to know Yahweh. And you will come to understand precisely what he is offering us and how we can engage in a relationship with him. And when you come to know and you come to understand, you are in a position to trust and rely, which is what he is encouraging us to do. But once you know, there is no reason for faith. Once you understand, there is no reason for belief. Faith and belief fill the void where people do not know or do not understand. And since Yahweh proves his existence in his prophetic testimony, he can be known for certain. In fact, if you're an agnostic, I got news for you. You can know that Yahweh exists for absolute certain. And once you come to know and understand, you will find that faith and belief are not only useless, they are actually counterproductive. Faith is a substitute for knowing. Those who do not know believe. Faith fills the void when evidence and reason are insufficient for understanding. So let's be clear. If you listen to the second half of this program, and if you have an open mind, and you're willing to dispense with your faith, you will come to know Yahweh. That is the promise. Now, as a surprise to many, God actually proves his existence well beyond any reasonable doubt. He does so by using prophecy. And in the process, he proves that he authored the testimony that you and I are going to consider. More on that after the break. Welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Now in the second hour of our program, we're devoting it to coming to know God on his terms and engaging him in his covenant. Again, a word of apology. I understand there's some technical glitches still as gremlins in the ether world, which are doing their best to try to disrupt the audio stream of today's program. So we will continue because the satellite uplink, I'm told, is working while the internet aspect of the show is not. All right, continuing on where we left off at the end of the last segment. As I told you, that to a surprise to many, particularly to those who would be atheists and agnostics, who would suggest that because God has not personally spoken to them, that he is unknowable, and therefore that there are challenges related to even coming to know him and to the whole issues surrounding whether or not faith is required. And before I answer that question again, we've received a number of callers and emails that say that there are issues with the internet upload of this program, which is unfortunate that there's lots of issues today with the Genesis Communication Network getting the audio stream to function properly online. But such are the headaches of a new program. And as such, we may need to repeat much of what we're talking about here today, tomorrow, because of these related issues. But the message that I wanted to convey to you is that Yah has an interesting capability that we one day will have that enables him to not so much predict the future, but report the future. And that's the basis of prophecy. Yah compares himself to light. And as light, time simply is. That's one of the things that Einstein realized, that time is relative to the observer. And if you were on a photon of light, that time would simply exist. The past, the present, and the future would be. Which means that on a photon of light, if you are like light, if you are energy, then you are capable of seeing the past, the present, and future as if they were all one. And such is the case with God. He is not predicting the future through his prophecy. He is reporting the future to us. He has actually seen it. He has actually witnessed it. And so he wrote sometimes 3,500 years ago in our past what we would experience in our future. Now, because he has thousands of these predictions, and as I say, there aren't actually predictions, they're future history, since he has made thousands of them, and since he has provided just remarkable detail into the when and where and how these things would transpire, if you were a rational and logical person and look what he said and then realize what happened, and you do a probability analysis, which is how we determine what is and isn't true, whether or not the facts prove something or the facts do not prove it. Well, in the case with Yah, some years ago, I took some 25 of the more interesting prophecies that he had made regarding the Messiah Yahusha. It's the person that Christians mistakenly call Jesus. And I took those predictions and I ran a mathematical model on what their chance fulfillment was if, in fact, the author of these prophecies had not actually seen them materialize. And it came to 10 to the 56th power, which is there aren't 10 to the 56th power molecules in the entire universe. It is absolutely impossible. So if you're rational and you consider the evidence, what you come to realize is that God actually proved his existence using the tool that it would be more effective in accomplishing that than anything else could possibly be. So, such is the nature of prophecy. And for those that might say, wait a minute, you know, some of these things were written after they actually occurred. Now, that's the beauty of what was found in the caves above Qumran with the Dead Sea Scrolls. Many of those scrolls date to in the range of 200 BCE. Most of them were written between 100 BCE and the transition from that era to our era. And as such, we have historical proof in writing well before these predictions materialized. We'll return to our program after the break. Again, this is Shattering Myths. For those that wish to call, 877-300-7645.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics. We continue, as many of you who have been trying to listen live to the program this morning, to have technical issues, but hopefully we'll get the gremlins out of the system and get this resolved going forward. What we were talking about as we went into the last break is that using prophecy proves that God authored the testimony we're going to consider. Proves it absolutely, unequivocally. And for those interested in reviewing some of those prophecies, you want to kind of get ahead of where we are here on the program, I would encourage you to go to either to introtogod.org or yadayah.com, and there you will be exposed to many hundreds of these predictions. Now, the reason that he did this, it is the best possible way when you consider his prime objective, which is to create a family-oriented covenant relationship, for him to prove that he exists. And the reason is that if he were just to stand up between us and the sun, for example, or be larger than life, or rent billboards and say, hey, I'm God, then he is impossible to deny. He has no interest in making it such that it isn't possible to deny him if you aren't observant. But if you're going to prioritize this search, and if you genuinely want to come to know him, and you're willing to invest the time to know him, then through his prophecies, in his testimony, he proves emphatically that he exists. So he gives you the choice to know him for certain under his terms, or to ignore him, or to do as most do in religion, which is to create a caricature of him that has no relationship to him whatsoever. So there's no better way. If your goal is to create a relationship that people either choose to participate in, according to his terms and conditions, to engage in, if you will, or to ignore, as agnostics might do, or to convolute, as religious people do, or to rebel against, to be antagonistic towards, no better way to do it than by consistently predicting our future in our past, so that only those who are willing to invest the time to come to know Yah actually come to know him. God is, it's a misconception that this notion that God loves all of his little children and that he knows all of us and that he's actively involved in our lives and he's going to save everyone. Absolutely not true. God only knows those who have taken the time to know him. He only listens to those who have learned about him from his Torah. He's only engaged in the lives of those who have engaged with him under the terms and conditions of his covenant. And his goal is not to save us, which is what most religions teach. His goal is to form a relationship with us on his terms once we come to know who he is and understand what he is offering. Salvation is a byproduct of the relationship. According to God, you aren't saved and then you get to know him. You must get to know him, understand what he is offering, respond to it appropriately, and then as a result of that relationship, he will save you. The goal of a family-oriented relationship, which is the covenant, based on the Hebrew word bereth, which itself is based on the word for family and home in Hebrew, beeth, necessitates the auspices of free will. One of the three gifts that God gave us as humans is free will. The ability to choose so that we can either choose to embrace Yahweh, ignore him, create a caricature of him and have a relationship with a myth, or be opposed to him. Our choice. Relationships require choice if those relationships are to be loving. Love cannot be compelled. So this puts God in a position where under free will, we have the opportunity to make this choice. And yet he provides us with the information we need to have to understand what our options are. I mentioned that God gave us three gifts, and I list one of them. So for those who are curious, the other two are, he gave us mortal life, which is a temporal existence under which we have the opportunity to exercise free will, which is the second gift. And the third gift that makes man unique from other animals is he gave us a nesama. A nesama is the Hebrew word for conscience. It's the ability to be judgmental, to exercise good judgment, to discern between right and wrong, truth and fiction, between myth and reality. in this program, we're going to exercise our Nesama. Now, that's something that's going to make a lot of people really angry, because in the religion, which has become the religion of the West, particularly in America, of socialist secular humanism, the replacement moral code of socialist secular humanism, the national religion of America, the media religion, the academic religion of this nation, says that being judgmental is a sin, that you're supposed to accept mutually exclusive things as being true, that you should be tolerant, and that you should embrace multiculturalism. God differs from that. He wants you to exercise good judgment. He's given you good information. He wants you to process that information rationally using your nesama, using your conscience, so that you can respond rationally, appropriately. And so as a result of that, we have three gifts from Yah, all of which we are going to exercise in this program. He gave us temporal life. Our souls are mortal. He gave us free will so that we can make choices relative to him. You know, you wish to be patriotic. You wish to be political. You wish to be religious. That is your choice. And my only goal is to provide you with information so that you can make the wisest choice possible. And we are given a nesama, which is an unused part of the human existence today, that is our conscience, which for those who are willing to exercise is the seat of judgment, our ability to discern right from wrong, separating myth from reality. So how, you may be wondering, did Yahweh conclusively demonstrate that he authored the testimony known as the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms? How did he prove that his witness can be trusted? The answer to both of these questions is prophecy. And that is why this book of books, this presentation in the second hour of Shattering Myths, will focus on God's predictive statements. By actually reporting in our past what would happen in our future, and by committing these very specific prognostications to writing centuries before their fulfillment, Yahweh demonstrated that he is unconstrained by time. Now, as I shared with you a moment ago, that is the same case that exists with light. Because Yahweh's spiritual energy is most similar to light of anything in creation, we know that he can see the past, the present, and the future as if they were all here and now. Now, that's really good news for us, because those of us who embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant will, in fact, manifest the qualities of light, which means we will be able to maneuver in time. We will be able to experience all of existence, past, present, and future, as one. It means that the far reaches of the universe, which are beyond travel because matter cannot be accelerated to the speed of light without filling the entire universe, that those places which are beyond our reach now become within our reach, because the time to go and visit a faraway galaxy takes no time at all when you become like light. Now, as is the case with light, time simply exists. Therefore, Yahweh has already witnessed, in fact, he has experienced that which is yet to occur in the ordinary flow of time. So God isn't so much predicting what might happen, but he is instead reporting on what has already happened, at least from his perspective in time. Now, what that means to us is that if Yahweh got so much as one very specific and highly improbable prophecy right, we'd be foolish to ignore what he had to say. But rather than one prediction, he has committed many hundreds of them, if not thousands of them, to writing, many of which were memorialized in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Even a relatively small sampling of these, often detailed and usually highly unlikely predictions, reveals that their chance fulfillment is less than winning a million-to-one lottery grand prize with a single ticket 10 times in a row. Taken collectively, the odds of lucky guesses as opposed to absolute foreknowledge underpinning the prophecies of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is more akin to playing 1,000 million-to-one lottery jackpots in a row and never failing once to win. Yahweh is so confident regarding his predictions, he says that we are free to reject him should we find a single error. So that we know God's perspective now, in his testimony. Do not assume that prophecy will completely monopolize our time. And I say this because with every prediction that Yahweh has made, he teaches us something important. His teaching, which is the Hebrew word Torah, permeates everything he has to say. And those teachings, those instructions, that guidance, that Torah, is often quite profound. And since these instructions are coming from God, the guidance he is providing along with them is vastly more important than the fact that he reliably foretells our future. He reliably tells our future so that we come to know that we can trust him. But that's it. The rest of it is all based on what he has provided to guide our steps to him so that we come to know him, so that we come to understand the covenant that he is offering us. On the other side of the break, we'll return to Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Our phone number, should you wish to call and question or criticize something that you've heard me say, is 877-300-7645. Couldn't help but notice that in the during one of the commercials, there was the reference to the Declaration of Independence, which speaks of the God-given rights. They don't use God's name, but his name is Yahweh. You now know that. The God-given rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mortal life is indeed one of the three gifts that we were given by God. Liberty, which is free will, is indeed a gift that we were given by God. The pursuit of happiness, now that's an interesting option. The reality is the third gift we were given was a conscience which enables us to evaluate the most important gift that Yah is willing to offer us but has not been given to everyone. It is only given to those who accept its terms and conditions, and that is the covenant. Now, the covenant is the means to eternal happiness, but while it is the means to eternal happiness, it is not a gift that is given to everyone. As a fact, based upon the statement that Yah makes in the second of the three statements that he etched on the first of the two tablets, only one in a million people, he says thousands and thousands amongst billions is one in a million, will benefit from his mercy. One in a million people will benefit from his mercy, and they will do so, he says, by observing his terms and conditions. And so that is why this program, we will devote ourselves to that. By the way, we were not given a God-given right to property or other things that were listed in the commercial. We were given three gifts, and those three gifts were to help us come to understand and accept and embrace the covenant, which is the ultimate pursuit of happiness. It is interesting, and maybe this is a good spot to interject another thought here, is that Thomas Jefferson was an interesting character. On the dark side, Jefferson was a Jacobin. For those who don't know Jacobins, but the Jacobins were the folks that led the French Revolution based upon the inspiration of Adam Weishaupt and his Illumes, the order of the Illuminists, known today as the Illuminati. And the other founding fathers, of course, were Freemasons, which is the other derivative of Adam Weishaupt's order of the Enlightened. And so on the dark side, unfortunately, Thomas Jefferson was a Jacobin. On the positive side, we find that that as brilliant as Thomas Jefferson was, he was one of the few public figures to recognize that Paul was a false prophet. We'll discuss that at length in future shows. But the reality is that Paul lied. He was not an apostle of Yahweh. He did not speak for God. He was a false prophet, which Jefferson wrote in one of his lesser known but nonetheless truthful letters, was that Paul was the first to corrupt Yahusha's message. Yahusha is the real name of the person that has been misnamed Jesus. And so Jefferson, to his credit, recognized that Paul was the first to corrupt his message. And we will spend an enormous amount of time speaking of the myth that tells us that Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, which is also a myth, spoke for God. Again, you want to challenge that, you wish to question it, I would encourage you to call. That number is 877-300-7645. So as we continue trying to engage God on His terms, we are going to focus on His predictive testimony. But that does not mean that prophecy will completely monopolize our time. It won't. And I say that because every prediction teaches us something that's important, often profound. And since these instructions are coming from God, the guidance He is providing with them is vastly more important than the fact He reliably foretells our future and accurately presents our past. We will, in a number of programs, get to the actual creation account. And you're going to be absolutely, I think, surprised by the fact that science and what Yah said are in perfect harmony. That God's explanation of how the universe, the earth, and life were conceived, and the order they were conceived, and the time under which they were conceived, are actually the same. That from God's perspective, it was 6 days, and from man's perspective, looking back using our clock here on Earth, it was 15 billion years. Well, thank you for listening. This is Shattering Myths. I appreciate the time that you have provided us today. I hope that you return tomorrow when we have less the technical gremlins that are challenging the audio streams. Again, this is Shattering Myths. Thank you for listening.
I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100. And